Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to apologize that I'm starting already, although you're not all seated yet, but we don't have that much time. The main speaker and representative of music therapy, Jana Procházková, had to go to court this morning, and that's why she could not come here today. Instead, she sent Jitka Pelhřimovská, who, however, got sick and he got a very high fever, so also could not come. So we're going to improvise a bit. I asked the executive director of the European Music Therapy Association, Markéta Gerlichová, to read the presentation of Jana Procházková. She said that she was actually sorry that she didn't know this before because she would have prepared her own presentation. Markéta works as a lecturer at the Faculty of Medicine and works with people with brain damage. So please welcome Markéta the Brave. Good morning, everyone. Can you all hear me? Because it's quite unpleasant to read the speech of someone else, I will try to pick only the important parts, and then I will tell you a bit more from my perspective and my practice. We all know what music therapy means and what it is about. I think that Czechs are very much into music. So music is something that is very close to us. So let me start with the text of my colleague, Dr. Procházková. She says that music therapy is actually quite an old discipline already because it's been around for 60 years. Music therapy in the Czech Republic started at the clinics of Professor Senik in Prague. She also says that besides psychologists and psychiatrists, of course, also musicians have been interested in music therapy, such as, for example, Stivín, Wojciechowski, Jurkovič, or Josef Krček. Another important point is that the Czech Medical Society also has a music therapy section led by Mr. Szymanowski, who is here with us today too. I'm sure that you all know Matěj Lipský, who represents the Czech Music Therapy Association. We also have another Czech Music and Drama Therapy Association that is currently working on its integration with the European Association. A high number of our music therapists have their own methods, such as, for example, the GENAPE method that emphasizes the biological and spiritual approach. There are quite many methods that have been developed in the Czech Republic. I would like to say that this year I've had the opportunity to present a speech at the European Association of Music Therapy. We were welcomed very warmly. They are quite interested in the Czech Republic for many reasons. At the European level, the main style of music therapy is the psychoneurological one. Then there are geriatric therapies and other music therapies. Are there any questions regarding the information I've given? If not, then let me continue, and then you can ask any time. I only had a very short time to prepare. There may be a few things that I would like to highlight. I would like to say something about the phenomenon of music as such, what actually music does to us when we work with it, when we listen to it, or when we create it. I think that music is very strong, very powerful. And of course, it depends also on the type of music. Live music is definitely better than recorded music. Music that we create is definitely better than recorded music. Improvisation is very important. I would also like to stress that it is very beneficial and healing if our clients can create their own music, even if they think that they're not able to do it, because they usually say, I can't do it, I'm not musical, but we give them two tones and a certain rhythm, and they always are able to create at a certain level. And it's usually much better than interpreting someone else's music. I often stress this also to music teachers, because they're used to saying to the children, well, now play F and A, and then the children just follow the orders, whereas it is always much more creative and inspiring for the children if they can create something themselves. In music therapy also, the individuality of the experience is very important, because many teachers have learned that, for example, Smetana's Vltava needs to be perceived in this and that way, and they don't really give children space for their own way of listening and perceiving the music. I'm sure that you all have experience with people saying that they have completely different feelings when listening to music than you. Another thing that I would like to highlight is the use of the natural musical talent, because in the Czech Republic we often say, well, there are people who are talented and there are people who are not talented, but I would like to say that most of us are talented by nature. And even children who come from non-musical families, if you work with them, then you can change a lot. When children have the possibility of listening to music, the best, of course, is when the parents sing to them, then the listening analysis somehow arises itself, and the children learn how to sing naturally. So let's not be afraid that we are not musical. I teach young doctors, Czech-speaking and English-speaking as well. Of course, the English-speaking students come from different parts of the world, but I must say that there's quite a big difference between the Czech students and the English-speaking students, because the English-speaking students are much more courageous. They're much more relaxed than Czech students, who are just used to repeating what they hear from teachers and who are just used to being examined and tested all the time. Improvisation is also very important. I've attended courses where there were, for example, graduates of conservatories and the music academy, who said that they often don't have enough space for their own experience with the music. And that's something that we should be able to affect. I think that the element of the self-experience and creativity are really highly important. And when we look at people with some kind of handicap, I focus on people with brain damage. So it's usually young people that have had a car accident and that then go through some kind of rehabilitation process. So we try to help them with the use of rhythm, with their speech. Sometimes we help them with their movements or space orientation, for example, through a listening analysis. Other people need to start communicating with the others, and so on. Before our clients leave, because they usually go to a six-week course to our day center. And at the end, we usually also involve the clients, parents or husbands and wives. And it's quite interesting to see how they work in verbal exercises. For example, a husband has had a car accident, and the woman had always admired him a lot, and so on. It's, for example, a man who had held quite an important position at work, and all of a sudden, after the car accident, their relationship has to be totally redefined. There are some quite unpleasant dialogues sometimes, but when you give the people a musical instrument and actually ask them to play something, it is for them quite a surprise to find out that they're able to communicate in a different way, and maybe more openly, without any prejudice. Another important thing in music therapy is movement, and now I mean movement at different levels, because we as healthy people can move without any limits, whereas, for example, physically disabled people, of course, are limited. Nevertheless, even people on wheelchairs should do something with movement, although it is limited because it is very useful. I'm originally a physiotherapist, so that's what maybe also why I like using movement a lot. Another important thing is relaxation. You all know that. We all try to provide relaxation to our clients. But what I would like to say is that we should also create space for our own relaxation. As the therapist, I should also relax because, you know, I can see that it's really difficult to relax regularly. On one hand, it is very easy, very simple. On the other hand, it's quite difficult to find the time for it. Another important issue is self-awareness. It is something that appears quite a lot when I speak. I can see it on my own path and also on the paths of my clients and students. We are affected by what society expects from us, what employers expect from us, our parents, teachers, and so on. And even little children are affected by the fact that people around constantly expect something from them. And sometimes what is missing is the space to realize what I really want, what I want to be, what I want to become, how I perceive things. I can see it a lot in my students, because students are used to seeing and being told how things should be. And in music therapy, we could actually change it entirely, because it's not about performance. It's not about, you know, achieving something. It's really about finding ourselves, expressing our feelings, our inner emotions. Another point is singing. You all know that it's healthy to sing. It supports our breathing vitality. It brings us joy and so on. People with some kind of speech impediment also find singing very useful, very helpful. We often have clients who actually learn to sing before learning to speak again, because the center for singing is somewhere else in the brain than the center for speech. So through speech or through singing, the people can learn how to speak more quickly. Another thing that I would like to highlight is listening. It's not only about listening to music or listening to someone else, but really understanding and really listening to what the people are trying to say, what the music wants to express, what it is trying to tell us. I would also like to mention silence, because I think that there's very little silence in today's world, and silence is very important for us. In order to be able to listen to music, we need pauses. We need breaks. We need to be able to experience silence. I'm sure that most of you go to the country quite often and hear silence. To hear silence in the city is really quite difficult. I personally have a big problem with this. When I go somewhere and there are screams and sounds and music all the time, even in hospitals, very active nurses wanted to help the patients not to be in silence all the time, which is, of course, nice of them. But if they just switch on the radio and it's on all day, then that's wrong, too. So it depends, of course, on the extent. of silence and sounds. As regards silence, I would also like to mention the element of tension before something very noisy starts. For example, when you imagine an orchestra, before the conductor in a game shows the musicians that they should start playing, then there is this very tensed silence, this moment of tensed silence. And I think that's something very interesting. And of course, the same, well, or similar kind of silence also arrives at the end. So I think the silence is also very important for music therapy. Another important element is rhythm. I've already mentioned that a bit. Rhythm is something amazing because we, in some form, all have it in our lives. Some people like music rhythm, some people prefer syncopic rhythm. Of course, others like other rhythms. We also feel the rhythm of the four seasons of our life and so on. I think that we can see it quite clearly when we have small children. Because then you have to align their rhythms with your own rhythm or pace. So, of course, we could speak about rhythms and paces at different levels. Even people who are disabled, for example, after a car accident and cannot move much, even with such people, you can use rhythm. Another note I've got here is listening analysis. By that I mean to be able to recognize even the smallest nuances. There's a doctor in France who helps actors and musicians to acquire a nicer voice. He says that we are actually today now not able to hear the smallest nuances of sounds anymore because there's just too much noise around us. And he teaches people by firstly listening the Gregorian choral, and then they also try to sing it. I know that, for example, Gérard Depardieu has written quite an interesting article on his therapy provided by this doctor, and he really said that his voice had changed substantially. Another important element is concentration. I'm sure that you all know this term, but I think that we are now today used to working on the computer. We switch from one window to another, then we get an email and so on. So our attention is quite dispersed. And when we have the possibility of concentrating on one thing really deeply, then it is much more effective. And it's also much more enriching for us. So I believe that it's much better to do one thing in detail than many things at the same time. However, of course, that is very difficult in today's world.
I have one more term noted down, expression, widely covered by my pre-speaker. In music therapy, there is a lot of ways how to express one's own feelings, emotions, usually through musical instruments, singing, even movement, and even visual artistic methods. We don't really abide by those borders that are drawn between the disciplines, but obviously each to his own, as they say. Music therapy is a major experience. It's about the relationship between the people who are creating something together. In my courses, I have music teachers who know exactly how things should be, which limits them. This is not the object of music therapy. Music therapy is non-directive, non-authoritarian. It's about one's own way and experience. Obviously, my background is in physical therapy, physiotherapy. I also studied music therapy with Professor Krček. I also studied music pedagogy with Professor Herden and Výchova. And I also studied psychomotoric techniques. I'm not sure if any of you are specialists in that. But this school was founded by a dancer who completed his education, who added psychology to his education. And what I like most about this discipline is because previously I studied also dynamic psychotherapy. And what I appreciate is when you have a group in session, in therapeutic session, that every participant in the group is experiencing something. The only or she only tells the group what they are experiencing with respect to the person who is at the center stage. So the other people are facilitating that central person's experience. And what I like, unlike in the dynamic therapy when people are hear that, you know, you've got to blame your mother for that, etc. Here, this is more genuine. It allows you to introspectively look into your own soul. That's why I like this method, and I find it very constructive. Any questions at this point? I have 5 minutes, 5 more minutes. So, let me just use this time by showing you two demos. In the first demo, obviously, with the limitations of the time we have, please relax in your seats, listen to the music that I'm going to play. And try to listen to your body and move it according to the music, as you feel it. Thank you. You have just experienced how difficult it is to move while seated. Imagine how difficult it must be for somebody in a wheelchair. Has anybody had any interesting experiences from that or feelings? Somebody who wants to share them. I just want to ask what piece of music it was. It was Penguin Cafe Orchestra from the CD. By a London Chamber Orchestra. Well, I was prohibited from playing my second demo, so I'll refer you to my workshop. Really, I recommend this lady's workshop. She's really good. Any questions to Marketa? Unfortunately, the question is not being asked via a microphone. The answer is Peso, Mr. Peso. I'm sure you can look him up on the internet. Questions?
May I speak English? Yes. I'd like to please share an observation.
Motivation?
Observation.
Observation.
Yes. For some years, I've worked with asylum seekers, victims of torture from many countries. And some of this work takes place in a small art therapy, no, not art therapy, art center that I run. And there is a question about art crossing over. My qualifications are in drama and art therapy, painting art therapy. Since starting the work 10 years ago, I found that music in the evenings by a fire, this is the rhythm, with a drum, or clicking the fingers, or moving together. And out of it comes stories, and out of it comes painting. Yes. Is it possible that the rhythm is simply to do with the heart, a universal?
So is the question whether the rhythm of a human heart plays the main role in musical rhythm? Well, it depends on anybody's opinion, really. I think the rhythm of the heart is a natural rhythm, and it's not very good, or it doesn't come across so well if we use rhythms that challenge the rhythm of our heart. Okay, thank you very much. And now we have a block of dance therapy. I have Miriam Berger with us, a dance therapist. She flew over from New York. She teaches dance therapy she practices dance therapy in New York, and she teaches as well in New York and in many countries. And she was one of the first people to organize a workshop in the Czech Republic in dance therapy. So she was one of the first dance therapy evangelists to ever come to our country.
Thank you very much, Jana. And I'm really honored and exhilarated to be here in Prague at this first Expressive Arts Congress. As Jana has said, I travel many places and teach in many countries, but I have a very special place in my heart for Prague. because it's one of the places I've visited the most in the past 14 years, and I always feel very much at home here, and I've made many dear friends and have very many special memories of teaching here. You see how it immediately affects me. I'm almost going to cry. I've always viewed the discipline of dance therapy as a field uniquely combining the sensibilities of art and that of science. And am I being heard all right? Okay. In fact, I must confess that my original motivation to become a dance therapist many, many, many years ago came not from so much from an actual desire to practice therapy as from an underlying recognition that this new modality provided the best and perhaps the only arena in which I could explore my ideas about the human body, movement, personality, behavior, culture, as well as dance and creativity. So if I refer occasionally to new discoveries in neuroscience, in my comments, you will understand that. It is gratifying to all of us that current brain research, as some of you may know, has provided scientific evidence for much of the creative arts therapies, theories, and practice. In the years since I began my work, I have been privileged to work with many colleagues from the fields of art, music, and drama therapy at Bronx Psychiatric Center, where I was head of the creative arts department for 22 years, at New York University, where I taught not only students in dance therapy, but art, drama, and music as well. And I might say that sometimes the art, drama, and music students were able to take more risks than the dance therapy students. And I was chair of the National Coalition of Creative Arts Therapies also in the United States. So I've had many years of wonderful interaction with the other creative arts therapies. So although my identity is clearly a dance therapist, I have always understood that all our arts therapies have strong elements and roots in common, and that these commonalities are crucial in the therapy process and equally crucial in the image that we present to the world. The strengths we share as artists and as therapists, and the strengths that link us to all of human history and to the deepest sources of human development. So what I thought I would simply share with you today are some core concepts and constructs that bind us together. And I may say that the three speakers before me have covered a lot of what I'm going to say, so that's a kind of serendipitous occasion. These are broad concepts that have been critical to my philosophy, but I'm sure they are vital to you as well, and I don't think any of them will be really new to you, but I'm sure that, and I'm sure you have additional concepts I may not touch on, but I thought if we shared them collectively, it will be more likely that we will embody them even more strongly. So these concepts, which I very fancy call it in a very fancy way, the aesthetics of healing, are creativity, form, rhythm, empathy, symbolism, and the body. I'll talk about these in terms of dance sometimes, but I know that you'll really understand their extrapolation to music, art, and drama, and their interrelationships. Our art forms, dance, music, the visual arts, and drama, have their roots, as we know, in the earliest history of human beings, roots that reflect religious and spiritual yearnings, the need to explain existence, and roots that are also reflective of specific locations around the world. These roots seek to explore common human experiences, birth, love, death, relationships, our search for, for the meaning of life, how the universe was created, and our need to give our lives meaning. And the origin of all art is found in man's use of the elements and processes of nature to serve as a means of foreseeing the future and controlling one's fate. Man observed nature and its changes, and certain changes as signs or omens, and then imposed symbolic significance on these phenomena, or divination. He then attempted to control the forces of external nature and his own internal forces by creating his own symbols through concrete ways, through sound, movement, and graphically. Religion and ritual arose from this journey, as did all art and science. And the root of all this extended symbolic language is the human body. And we will see that we can return to it, trusting it as the source of universal knowledge. So I'll begin with the body, and if Jana would put on my little graph, we can see that the body is the core of the process through which we as human beings explore, structure, and symbolize the world. I must confess that this is a construct I've been referring to for years, and I first saw in a presentation by a drama therapist at a conference many, many years ago. I always used to remember his name. I can't anymore. And I believe it is roughly based on the theories of Piaget and Winnicott, but it's a very rough diagram and very creative. So just to see how the symbolism comes from the body very quickly and very roughly. You see that if you can think of this both in individual terms as a baby develops and also as cultures develop, sort of mix them all up. Baby is born and perceives the world somehow, perceives the world, is able then to develop images internally, see images here, and then is able to take action with the body. And the only thing we have to operate with is the sound and the movement of the human body. That's the way we begin. And from that, we go up in two different directions, through movement. Movement then develops into dance, then develops into three-dimensional art. The baby moves, and the first way the baby tries to symbolize is to make three-dimensional figures or images to symbolize something else. That's why we have sandboxes for children. And then moves on to more abstract form of two-dimensional symbolization. Through the sound of the body, we come to music, to words, to language, to science, to literature, to everything. Through all this that has begun with the body. The body is the first symbol, and from that we extrapolate into these other forms. And in dance, the body is always the symbol. And so dance is kind of mysterious in that dance is the reality of the body and the symbol of something else at the same time. You can ask me questions about this later. I went through this very, very quickly. But we see that the arts are the first step in the symbolic process, and that through this proximity to primal experience, it's also our first access to our pre-verbal development, very important in therapy. And through music, dance, and art, we can almost instantaneously connect to feelings and states that cannot be expressed verbally, as we know. And truly, this gives us a unique advantage as therapists. This core and this unique strength that we have in the arts therapies is that we can elicit a vital human experience that is transformative. The simultaneous experience of the real and the symbolic. In other words, the real experience of the body at any moment can be fused with the cognitive process of symbolization. In the neurological lexicon, as I mentioned, this is referred to as reflexive consciousness. One state is accompanied by another state. One state A is accompanied by another state about A. And this brings us, this is a very important human experience, the simultaneous experience of the real and the symbolic that we as creative arts therapists have in all of our forms. This brings me to an important process and tool in the expressive arts therapies, which is empathy. Especially significant for dance therapists. Excuse me. The concept, however, is a core concept for all the expressive arts therapies. The term attunement, I believe, is most commonly used in music therapy. Empathy is defined as emotional and or intellectual identification with another, vicarious experiencing of the feelings or ideas of another. Empathy goes beyond the simple understanding of another's emotional state to the actual embodiment of the experience of that state. Daniel Stern considers empathy an embodied affective resonance that involves some level of cognitive processing, again connected to what I previously mentioned, reflexive consciousness. I just want to mention at this point that perhaps the most illuminating and evolving discovery of neuroscience currently that is relevant to our work is that of mirror neurons. Neurons in the brain that are activated by the experience of an outside stimulus. The activation of mirror neurons depends on the empathic identification with another person. This construct can be further amplified, postulating two types of identity, the individual identity and the social identity. The social identity is a neurobiologically based capacity for empathy and understanding of another, evolving from very early self-other interaction. Daniel Stern says that the development of this intersubjectivity is nurtured by a shared framework of meaning and means of communication, such as gesture, posture, or facial expression. Interpersonal behavior has moved from overt actions and responses to the internal subjective states that lie beyond the overt behavior. So we see that our emotional reactions are not only determined in terms of kinesthetic recognition, but in terms of kinesthetic response as well. We assimilate what we perceive into our own present experience in the form of kinesthetic mimicry. We may perceive emotional behavior in others and immediately experience it within our own bodies through kinesthetic empathy. Kinesthetic empathy is crucial in all the arts therapies and in verbal psychotherapy as well. But in dance therapy, it operates as a key primary process in full consciousness, as it were. Dance therapists are trained specifically to pick up movement from their clients and to reflect that movement back. In so doing, they have the chance to experience the emotional state of the client and the possible pathology intrinsic in that state, and to assist the client in further choices beyond that kinesthetic response. This brings me to the next topic, which was just mentioned by the music therapist that spoke, rhythms or patterns, an important concept in our work. Patterns of expression, patterns of behavior, patterns of being. The rhythms and patterns we pick up through kinesthetic empathy. As human beings, we are essentially composed of a symphony of rhythms, our breath, the flowing and the pumping of our blood, the intricate rhythms of our nervous system. We are constantly in a process of balancing and integrating these rhythmic levels. Through sound and music, we can intensify our perception of our own rhythms as we express them through music and dance. And through art, we can see them graphically outlined on paper or shaped in clay. We begin to see that we have a unique personal rhythm, and we may recognize the rhythmic signature of others, their patterns. And as art therapists, we have the unique opportunity to work with perceived and expressed patterns in sound, movement, and graphics, even if we do not have the knowledge of a client's personal history or a specific designated problem. In dance therapy, the client and the therapist have direct access to both the individual and universal pool of motor imagery. Music therapists access the individual and universal pool of sound and music. Art therapists access to the individual and universal pool of real and abstract images. On an individual level in dance, movement, impulse, and action will release content and pattern from deep levels of consciousness, which will be performed and expressed once again on a motor level, releasing further kinetic memories. These symbolic forms and patterns experienced on the physical level in the present offer immediate information for the formulation of insight and further repatterning. We can hypothesize that certain essences within each movement experience will emerge, which will be found to encompass a coherent whole. A coherent whole in the sense of connected information forming a story and a pattern or a rhythm. On a universal level, these core patterns and forms will also embrace human archetypes and themes of polarities beyond content. In the experiences and the analysis of these pools of information, we also have access to the aesthetic impulse or the aesthetic imperative possible within each human being. And this brings me to the concept of forming. The human tendency to make order and form out of chaos. On an emotional level, this ordering strives to bring stability and insight. In psychotherapeutic language, we might say that the process of forming in the arts is analogous to working through in the psychotherapeutic realm. But in the arts, the client can form concretely and see, hear, or feel that form. Not so in verbal psychotherapy. And in the process of forming, the process of forming then allows the opportunity to change that form and experiment with new forms. This urge of man to form, to create patterns mirroring his existence, stems both from the emotional and biological need for harmony, as I have mentioned, and from the rational need for the imposition of order on existence. Gilbert Rose, in his book called The Power of Form, said, "The aesthetic experience emerges from the participation in this source and structure. It moves toward a reorientation on a complex present reality in which each of the coordinates of orientation, time, place, and person bears an ambiguous aspect, reflecting the different ways in which the mind functions. the need to keep oriented in a fluid, expanding reality lies at the heart of aesthetic form. Or to put it the other way around, the significance of aesthetic form is rooted in our biological nature. And this brings me to creativity, which was so beautifully covered by the drama therapist from Italy. The world consists of many elements at all levels of experience, and the process of creativity can be seen as combining old elements in new ways. In dance, the artist combines and recombines the movement of the body in space and time. In music, sounds from the body or instruments are combined and formed into new melodies and harmonies in rhythms and time. In art, line, color, and shape are reformed in two- or three-dimensional space to create new images. And in drama, these elements can be combined with the added symbols of language. In therapy, the therapist facilitates the same process, seeing the elements, suggesting alternatives, helping to frame and reform the elements. The therapist must be in the creative process every minute of the therapy session, creating new structures and ideas moment to moment from what comes before. The whole unfolding of the therapeutic journey is therefore a creative process for the client, who in essence is developing and creating a new sense of self. He is creating a new person, not changing the old one, totally. It is being expanded, transformed, transcended. That is the creative process, and it is the human being who is the work of art. And in the expressive arts therapies, this process operates with even greater intensity because the art therapist has the good fortune to work with two factors not always available to other therapists. His innate creative force as an artist is one strength, and the concrete elements he has to create and play with, as has been mentioned before this morning, the body, movement, sound, color, line, shape, as well as words. He brings the gift of his art form to the client, who then has a richer field through which to see himself and more tools with which to recreate himself. Within these forms, inherent in their basic tools and elements, exists the capacity to create shape and to illuminate patterns of expression and impression. And this brings me back to the first point and the most important point I mentioned, which I think is the core of our work, that the core experience and the core strength of the arts therapies is this capacity to provide one of the most powerful human experiences, the simultaneous experience of the real, the body, and the abstract, the symbolic, due to all the elements we have shared. This, of course, does not happen at every moment, but can be extraordinarily transformative when it does occur. And this transformative moment brings us, as artists, back to our roots in ancient history, to the creation of ritual, an experience that always combines reality and symbol, an experience aimed at understanding, control, and spiritual transformation, an experience in what we may call the aesthetics of healing. Thank you very much.
Hej, tenhle funguje.
Tak.
Any questions?
Dotazy?
What's intellectual about empathy?
What's intellectual about empathy?
Yes, because you said that empathy is, I don't remember the exact words you used, like...
Cognitive.
Okay, yeah.
That was
the cognitive and intellectual, I think.
No, I didn't use the word intellectual, although there's nothing wrong with that word. But the body sense and the cognitive processing operate simultaneously. We have something called kinesthetic empathy. Total empathy may involve cognitive processing as well. I didn't use the word intellectual. Cognitive, yeah. And then it's what I tell myself about it, what I say to myself about it. What does it mean?
Okay, it's necessary for the therapy also, though.
Maybe, maybe not.
Okay. Thank you.
It's just, it can operate, but maybe sometimes dance therapists move with their clients without words, and that's enough. The understanding is nonverbal on a very deep level and cannot be put into words. Sometimes it can.
Hello. You have mentioned about individual and universal images, and I would like to know what you see as a universe images. What clients, individual and universal images you mentioned about it?
Yes, yeah.
Yes, I'm very much interested to know what you think of universes.
Well, when I use the word images, I'm also including universal themes of, for instance, there's a continuum in that's very important when we look at any kind of pathology, very, very broadly. There's a continuum between total fusion with another person, total fusion, and total isolation. This is a human story, a human theme that comes up specifically very often in many pathologies, that it has to do with too much fusion with other people, not enough self-identity, or too much isolation from the rest of the world. So that is something that might be called a universal theme that might appear in individuals.
I'm sorry, I don't understand a little bit. Is that means like a universe as a world?
Universe as a world?
What? Like a world culture, world.
No, when I use the word universal, I mean, what do I mean? When I use the word universal, I mean something that all human beings participate in, or all human beings have a connection to. I don't mean the universe. Am I not making myself clear?
Okay. Thank you.
Tak já bych chtěla poděkovat Mimi, už není čas na další dotazy. Děkuji.
Thank you.
Now it's time for lunch. So we've got 2 hours for lunch, but first a few technical comments. One very important thing, please return the headsets before leaving for lunch. Another point is that after lunch, there are going to be the workshops. So don't come back here to this venue, but go to the venue of the particular workshop that you've enrolled in. The workshops are going to start at 2 o'clock. Please be there in time. And when you return the headset, please don't forget also to sign it, sign the paper there. Another thing is that from 4 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, there is going to be a film screening in Heller's Hall. For those who don't want to go to any workshop or for those who have not been able to enroll in any workshop due to lack of place, there's not going to be any commentary, but there's going to be a film on dance therapy. And one more thing regarding tomorrow, the workshop of Manfred Weigl was supposed to be in English and in Czech, but it's not true. It's going to be in German and in Czech, so no English there. So now please enjoy lunch and enjoy the workshops starting at 2 o'clock.